5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hello and welcome to Contemplations. I'm joined by Hugo and I'm Josh, and we're going to talk to you today about competition.
Hello. So today we're going to continue our conversation from yesterday. Yesterday we talked about regulation. Specifically, we mentioned different modes of regulation, right? And we said that regulation by competition is actually one of the things that you can have. And today what I'm going to do is try to make the case for why that regulation by competition is actually more desirable, something that produces better results than that regulation just by state edict or just state legislation. And so we're going to be talking about competition, but in a very specific context. Usually the way that conversations go about competition is just in the economic sphere, right? So how it is usually is that people say, if you have a market system and in the market system you have a lot of consumers and a lot of producers, you will have competition between those consumers and those producers, right? And that produces some results and blah, blah, blah. And that is something that is a good discussion, but it's not something that I want to have today, right? The discussion is going to be about something else. It's going to be specifically about the regulation part of competition, about how competition can produce regulation and rules that are kind of put upon society, that are enforced upon society in some ways. And so we talked about that a little bit yesterday. We said that part of it is that it's not as strong in some ways as state legislation, state regulation, just because if you have a rule, quote unquote, that is set by competition, by the result of competitive pressures, you are still not prohibited from doing that other thing, right, that you might want to do, that you might want to disobey that rule. Well, you're not prevented from doing it, but it's going to cost you more, it's going to be inconvenient, it's going to be a hassle, right? And that's the difference. That's the main difference between those two modes of competition, of regulation, sorry. Just to make it clear that that is an important difference, right? Because when it comes to something that you're not really sure about whether it's good or bad, right? You have a rule that you're not really certain that it's a good rule. Well, then it matters whether people are actually prevented from doing it or whether they can overcome that rule through investment in the alternative, right? So I don't know if that's something that you would think is important in that way. What would make it better?
I'm just trying to think of some context where that might be the case, where there is a rule, but there's some kind of alternative, mm-hmm. and I'm trying to just think of it in that sense, because in the abstract, it's kind of almost difficult to think about. So what would an example be where it might be beneficial to have this, go this alternative route, or it might be incentivized to do so?
So, for example, in some countries, the education system, which is a weird phrase, but whatever, the education system that you have is that you have these schools that are set up in quite similar ways that are well aligned with one another. You have it prescribed what the schools can do. They are maybe all state-owned, state-based. It's not in the UK, not in the US. That's not the situation, but elsewhere it can be, and it is in some countries. And so those schools basically teach in the same way, and you have to put your children there. And so you have no other choice, right? So even if you really care about teaching your children in some different ways, you effectively can't do it just because this is something that you have to do. You'll get punished if you don't. Your kid can be taken away from you or something like that, right? And so if, as an alternative, if you have a system where this is not as prescribed by the state, it's something that is more governed or regulated by competition, well, then it can have similar results in the mainstream, in the main part of the system, let's say, but it can have the other options. So let's say that most people still prefer to have that mode of education, right? So to have classrooms, children sitting in the classrooms and the teacher standing in front of them, they're learning something, hopefully, and that's something that you find nice. You want to send your children there. If most people have that kind of conviction, that's fine, you know, and that most schools will be like that. But at the same time, if you don't want to do that, you're not banned from doing something else, right? So there might be an alternative school that teaches in a circle rather than in a classroom, right? Which is, that's something that I just came up with. It's not something that would be necessarily realistic or not, I don't know. But if you want that alternative, you can get that, even though it's something fringe. It's not something that it's something that is inconvenient just because there's not as many, because most people prefer something else, but it's not something that you're banned from doing, right?
Okay, that makes sense.
And so competition is one of the ways that the system can be regulated, right? But it's just not as strong, not as straightforward. Because if you have 95% of the schools that are in that way just because most people want it that way, well, then that's effectively really a regulation because it imposes costs upon you for doing something else. But those costs might not be prohibitive, but those are real. And that is a rule that is set in some ways by that demand, by that competition. And so everyone kind of knows how state regulation works. And so how does this regulation by competition work? I outlined that a little bit yesterday, so I just want to repeat that kind of basic framing just to make sure that we cover all the bases. And so we've got multiple owners of property. One owner sets a rule. Well, then another owner can set another rule, different rule, and then people choose between those rules and they patronize the owner or the producer of something that where the rules are more what they want, more in accordance with what they want. So that causes the other owner to change their behavior and compete for customers that way. And so that competitive pressure is something that regulates that owner, that first owner,
right? Yeah, there's more of a pressure for the alignment of the regulations of the business owner and the customers.
Exactly. And so owners adjust rules to get the most customers that they can, right? That's the point. And so that competitive pressure is a regulatory pressure. It's not yes or no. It's not you have to do it or you can't do it, but it's a real pressure and it's something that you need to conform to. Otherwise you'll be losing money. You'll be losing your position anywhere, right? And so that is something that is real, and that is why I call it regulation, because this pressure is here and this pressure influences people's behavior. It imposes costs on you doing something else. And so you might notice that this is analogical to how the economics about around products behaves. So with products, you produce something, someone else produces it better, and you lose customers, and then you change your business, you adjust to getting those customers back, to getting more, right? So that's like, if you're buying a banana, if you're producing bananas, that's what you do. Like, and why is the production of rules analogical to the production of products, like bananas, right? It's because regulation is a product in some ways, right? It's in the same way that competition produces products aligned with the desires of the people, it produces rules that are aligned with the desires of the people. And so you've got that. That is kind of an important thing to consider, important thing to realize, that what we generally think about what is happening with products like bananas in the economy is the same rules applies to same kind of economic laws, same natural laws, let's say,
apply. Oh, I don't like the phrase natural laws.
they apply as much to rules and rulemaking, because good rules are a product. And why is it a product, right? The product is because there is a demand for rules, because people want to live in a society, right? And they want to live in a particular society, they want particular rules. They want some rules, but they don't want other rules. And so if this is what they want, well, then that can be provided better or worse, and that demand will kind of incentivize potential suppliers to create the supply for it, right? And so this behaves exactly like a product. Doesn't matter that it's not tangible, it's not something that you can hold in your hand, it's something that fits in your hand really neatly like a banana because God made it. It's not like that, you know? But it behaves in the same way, even though it's not really tangible, it's not something that you can touch. So I don't know if you agree with that assessment or if that's something that you would find intuitive as well.
I think that more or less makes sense, although I think you said something about, I can't remember, you're saying that the regulation is a product in and of itself, but is it not that it shapes the product or the service in the first place? It's not necessarily that people are, say in an economy, mm-hmm. are saying, well, I chose this because it's got the best rules. I don't think people necessarily think like that, although it does shape the product or service that they receive. Mm-hmm. It's just something that isn't necessarily kind of in their mind when they're looking at it, or at least that's my understanding.
So if you generalize that objection that you have, mm-hmm. You're saying that one product, if we say that it's a product, that product affects other products, mm-hmm. and products generally do affect other products. If you have, I know, bricks that are a product, and you have lorries that are a product. If lorries transport bricks, well, then if you change the size of lorries because of some demand for lorries somewhere,
then it's going to change the price.
It's going to change the price of the product. Yeah. It's going to change the shape of the product if you want to store it better in that lorry. It might affect products, affect other products, and changes in some products affect changes in other products, affect other products. And so this is the same situation, in my opinion. You have one product that is the rules, and then you have other products that are might be consumer products, might be food or might be whatever, furniture, I don't know.
I certainly don't disagree with that. That makes perfect sense to me.
So it's just about generalizing. It's about sufficient generalization, right? So if you think of it as a product, but then you just need to ask yourself whether it's a problem that a change in one product affects another product. It's not a problem, right? That happens often. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean one of them is not a product. And so that is, I think, why it's not, there is no conflict in there. Just because you obviously have to produce product according to some rules and not others, right? And so just to reiterate that main point a little bit, to bring it back to the real world, what I'm saying, what I was trying to explain with all of this so far, is that the free market is not an unregulated market. And so people mostly understand that it's not something that there would that there will be no rules and you can do whatever you want. That's not it, right? Behaves differently. But what I'm also saying, it's not that it's not a self-regulated market either. And that's what most people are saying. It's not regulated, but it's self-regulated. No, it self-regulates, and so therefore it works without outside influence, outside interference. But I'm saying that it's a market just as much regulated as an openly state-regulated market, but it's regulated along the lines of popular demand. That's what I'm saying. So it's not something that would be self-regulated. It's not something that it's not that kind of producers. Because that's how some people, I don't want to mention names, but that's how some people imagine that the economy works, right? The free market works, is that you have producers and maybe you have the 10 big producers in one industry and they're all going to get together and decide for the good of humanity, we're going to do X. Yeah, we're not going to be as polluting because we care about the world. And they imagine that self-regulation means this. Right. And that's why I'm saying self-regulation is a bad term for it. It's not something that would be accurate in for what actually happens, because this is not what actually happens. What happens is that they might be as evil as they can, but they're forced to do something and not do other things because of popular demand.
Mm-hmm. I think when people look at it in that perspective, they're bringing to mind the kind of view of regulation as a state-based thing. They don't see it in perhaps a more nuanced way.
Yep. And that's kind of because if you think of a boss of a huge corporation, you know, a lot of people imagine it as this kind of dictator that can do whatever they want. Well, they can't. They their job is to figure out the precise way to make it work to conform to popular demand. That's what they're trying to do.
Yeah, and that's quite a limiting thing.
Exactly. It's very limiting. It's like they have very narrow set of options of what they have to do, and they don't know what they are, and they have to figure that out. That's their position.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not the bosses. The bosses are the consumers. The bosses are the people who demand what they produce. And so, so just to reiterate, like the free market is regulated just as much as the state involved market. It's just through a different mechanism. And what is often done in practice is that you replace that market-based regulation by consumer demand by state regulation. And this state regulation kind of crowds out the market demand regulation. Right? And that, I think that's bad because that kind of regulation is inferior because its inputs are inferior. I'm going to expand that later. But I'm saying if you have that regulation by popular demand, that's going to produce much results that are much closer to what people actually want, is going to produce that alignment that we talked about yesterday. It's going to produce that alignment much closer than if you actually have that mechanism of regulation crowded out by a different kind of regulation, which is the state regulation.
Yeah, and the state regulations are imposed upon things, whereas the kind of market regulation in a free market economy is just the people making free choices. Mm-hmm. So just at a theoretical level, it seems less satisfactory than the opposite.
Yeah. And so just to mention what I've already mentioned in the beginning and yesterday, how it works is that it's not a hard and fast rule that is set by competition. Usually it's that a majority of people have some kind of a standard and you might have different preferences, and so you want to act upon those different preferences. But if you want to do that, you need to pay more in some ways. You need to overcome that hurdle that is the majority tendency. That is kind of majority tendency draws you one way, so if you want to go another, you need to overcome that pull. But you can still do it. It's not something that you would be banned from doing. And so now you arrive at that point where I address your objection from yesterday, which is that the people, quote unquote, the people might not be a single block. There might be different preferences among different groups of people. So when I say, oh, the people want X and the regulation can provide them X or provide them Y, and it's better than if they have X, well, that's not enough because the people don't have to be a homogenous group,
mm-hmm.
and can include a lot of different people with different preferences, right? And so I'm going to say that competition, regulation by competition, is good because competition promotes divergence where the divergence is wanted, and it produces convergence where the convergence is necessary. And so I'm going to explain that, right? So let me give examples to illustrate what I mean. I'm going to give one commercial example and then one regulation example, because those are analogical, because those are products in the same way, but it's easier to imagine when we talk about commercial products. And so there's, for example, there's no one brand of shoes that would dominate the market and everyone, like 95% of people, would have the same shoes, same type of shoes, because people have different preferences for what shoes do, what kind of function they perform, like whether what you want to do with them, and then how they look, and like it's a fashion thing. So there might be different groups with different goals and different styles around shoes, and so you have a lot of different producers for, like, you have that kind of diversity of those producers.
The different producers fill a different kind of niche, and they specialize in different things. Yeah.
And so, in contrast, there is one standard size of a credit card, right? And okay, right now you can say, well, that's internationally regulated. You know, that there's a treaty or whatever, international treaty, that states have signed, that says credit cards, they have to be that big. True, fine. But the point is, before that treaty went into effect, before that was put in place, that standard, those dimensions had already been developed, and basically no one was producing credit cards that would be a different size, because you want to stick them in machines that want to give you money and you want to do different things with them. So, and it's something that is, it's so immaterial how big a credit card is, or like what proportion it has, that the benefits that you get from all of them being the same size across the world is far outweighs the costs of you being prohibited from making it a centimeter smaller, right? Yeah. And so this is how that convergence comes in, comes to be in the commercial sphere, in the commercial example, right? So you have the credit card of convergence of standards that then also becomes the regulatory standard, but that's a side point, that's not important, because that's not how it came to be. And so the other example is the regulation example. So let's say that you have a town where you have a city where you have a couple of parks, and the parks are owned by individual businessmen or firms or whatever, property owners, and you have an overwhelming majority of people who don't want to see drunk people in parks because they found it obnoxious, they found it insulting or whatever, they don't like it. And so what the park owners will do is that they will try to attract people, right? So the rules that they will set in the park will be, okay, you can't have alcohol in here. You can't be drunk in this park. If you're drunk, you're going to throw you out. So this is going to be how all parks are going to be, probably, because an overwhelming majority wants that. So if you want to drink in a park, you bad luck, you can't. Then imagine another society, same situation, different preferences. A sizable portion of the people might want to actually drink in a park, but another portion, sizable portion of the people don't want to drink in a park, right? They find it obnoxious, same thing as last time. Well, there is an incentive for the park owners to, you know, satisfy both groups, because both groups are sizable, both groups are, there's something to gain. So you can expect those rules to be set differently in some parks than in others. And in some parks, those will be drinking parks, and some other parks will be non-drinking parks. And that is how both of those groups get to be satisfied, because there's something to gain by the providers of those rules, by the setters of those rules on their own property, on their own territory.
So there would be examples where, presumably, a society half full of teenagers that like to go drinking in parks for some reason, and then half of them that don't, and then I imagine that these parks would correspond to the locations where these people are concentrated, maybe. I imagine.
Yep,
and that would be the market pressure to do so, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. Exactly, that would make sense, probably. But again, so if you had those different preferences that the people around you in your neighborhood, you could still go to a park where it's your preferences, but you'd have to travel 20 minutes on the train. You know, it's fine. You know, it's something that is a cost. It's not something that you're prohibited from just by the virtue of like it being a state edict, because it's not a state edict. It's governed by regulation by competition, which is fungible. It can adapt to different groups of people wanting different things. This can be the result where you're inconvenienced, but you're not prohibited from something, or you're not made to do something else. And so where you actually need a common standard for something to work, because otherwise it wouldn't work, like with the credit cards example, well, then you will have the incentive for the producers or for the people involved to gravitate towards that standard just because you want to get something out of it at all, you know, because otherwise you wouldn't be able to get any money out of it, anything good that you want. The difference is that with competition as regulation, you can have a fringe outlier that where if it's worth it to be an outlier, if for some reason you want to do something else, and to do something else is so valuable for you that you're willing to pay enough money to overcome that majority opinion, that majority tendency, then that's still possible, right? And that's not possible under state regulation because it's in simply banned. So that's a huge thing, I think, in favor of regulation by competition. And so competition is not something that would be inherently good, right? I have to talk about that a little bit. Competition is fundamentally neutral. It depends on how it's used, how you practice competition, how you set up people to compete. Because, and I have to mention this, because typically it's seen as good, right? Most people see competition as good. Okay, we're talking about market circumstances where there's competition, you have all these good things, you have better service, lower price, everything. And so that's something that you want competition good, right? Well, not necessarily. It can be bad. If you look at, if you're saying that under competition you get better and cheaper product, well, that depends on what the product is. If you say that, if we look at, I know, who can rape people best, right?
Don't know what
that's an extreme example, I know, but it's a good extreme example to illustrate my point. If you look at who can rape people best, and you don't want competition in that field, right? Because competition is going to make it better and cheaper, and you don't want it to make it better and cheaper for people to rape other people, right? That's the opposite of what you want, and so you don't want competition in that area. And that's kind of why I'm arguing so strongly against state regulation, because you want that alignment. People, we can all agree that people don't want other people to be raped, and people don't want themselves to be raped. And
why did you choose such a horrible example?
Because it's a good illustration of my point. So the alignment between what people want, mm-hmm, and what people get is quite clear here.
Sure.
If they get norms where that doesn't happen, well, then that's good. If that can happen or does happen, well, that's not that good, right? And so the demand is always against rape. The competition, therefore, is in how to prevent it, right? Mm-hmm. That's where the competition is, because the demand is against it.
So you're saying that competition is something that we should selectively apply to areas, yep, where we want there to be better, yep, results.
And why I'm saying I'm very much against state regulation, but for regulation by competition, is that a state can be arbitrary in this way. It, mm-hmm, can generate random demand just by the virtue of having a lot of money that it had stolen. It can generate random demand for rape, regardless of whether the society wants it or not, right? And then it can generate that random demand for rape, and then it's just going to let producers compete for its provision, right? So it's just going to generate a competition that, even though it's an area where you absolutely don't want competition to be. And so I use that extreme example to illustrate that this is one of the reasons why you don't really want that state regulation, because it's to a large extent arbitrary, right? It's not it doesn't necessarily produce that alignment between what people want, the regulation that people want, and the regulation that they get, just because it's one step removed and it has its own motivations and its own goals. So if I used the example of, okay, the state is going to invest in green energy, that wouldn't be too visible of what my point is, because even though it's the same kind of mechanism, it's applied to very different things and people have very different standards, very different preferences about that. So it's not as visible what is actually happening and what isn't, right? And so why I chose that ugly example is because
everyone uniformly agrees. Against it.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. And so that's a huge thing that you want to prevent, right? Mm-hmm. That prevent that kind of divergence between what people want in the kind of regulation they want, the kind of regulation they get. And that alignment is much better gained by, much better approximated by competition and by regulation, by competition. So I just wanted to, circle back to why regulation by competition is better than regulation by state, right? And so I already said that it's because of its inputs. And what I mean is that with competition, with different kind of small owners and different kind of rule setters that each set their rules of their own, on their own property, what you get is inputs that are constantly flowing and constantly updating, and those inputs are the preferences that people express in consumer choices. So if you choose that product over another product, if you choose to go through that park over that park, right, that produces a constant kind of feed of information to those producers. So that is a much better input than something that the state can get. Because with the input that the state gets, you've got kind of three problems. The state only gets an input mostly every 4 or 5 years in elections, right? So it's not continuous. It's only once every couple of years. Well, that's a limitation. Okay, first problem. Second problem, it doesn't have many incentives to actually care about that feedback. So if you actually give that feedback to that state on whether they do a good job with regulation or not, with that alignment, well, they don't have to listen to you at all.
Right? Yeah, as long as they're responsive to some of people's demands, they can still be re-elected whilst ignoring certain areas.
Yep. And they can just kind of bamboozle you with stuff. What they can do is just do for 3 years, they're going to do something that will produce a misalignment between the regulations that you might want and the regulations that you get. And then the fourth year, they'll go on television and say, okay, I'll do all this and that, I'm going to do what you want. And then you re-elect them and they're going to do the same thing as before, which is something else that you want. And that's what happens typically in democracy. So that's a second problem. And the third problem is that the input is worthless anyway, because it's not weighted, right? So if you have a decision on whether the park is going to be alcohol-free or not, well, you're going to have some kind of referendum on it in the town. But you might have people participating in that referendum who go to the park every day and who go to the park every year. Those shouldn't be weighted the same, but they are, because you're just taking the tally, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's those results, that those inputs are absolute garbage. That's not usable in any way. And because of those three problems, the state can only get very bad inputs. And so even if we posited that the state can actually have produce, that the state actually has good intentions and everyone in the state has good intentions, that state regulation is going to be much further away from what people actually want. The regulation that they want is going to be much further away from what regulation by competition can accomplish because of those inputs that type of regulation can get. And so just to end it, I'm going to re-emphasize what I said before, because what I said at the end of last yesterday's episode is that if you have that alignment, if you have that kind of harmony between what type of regulation people want and what they get, people will feel more free, they will feel less oppressed, and vice versa. If you're going to have a lot of regulation by state rather than by competition, you're going to have a lot of mismatch, a lot of misalignment between those two, and so people will probably feel less free and more oppressed. And then you can say that you can look at the data around this psychological data mostly, can take data about what makes people happy, and freedom, feeling of freedom is usually a big part of it. So
yeah, a sense of autonomy is generally speaking something that is very important in developing something known as self-actualization.
So even if you
desirable,
even if you don't necessarily care about freedom and you care about other things, well, one of the things that you might care about is happiness, and that happiness is very much affected by that freedom as well. So even if that's not what your priorities are, this is something that addresses it as well.
Okay, well, to be honest, I agreed with a lot of that. Obviously, competition is something that is very valuable, particularly in the economy, I think. But I think in the case of governments, I think we might be a little bit less in agreement. But nevertheless, thank you very much. And thank you for watching. And make sure to check out our website at lotuseaters.com. And goodbye.
Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.